broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Bobby, Mr. and Mrs. Dooley have agreed to come back on the program tomorrow night. Well, hold on. Excuse me, folks. Mr. and Mrs. Dooley have agreed to come on the program again tomorrow night. And we had our audio muted on our video cast throughout the break. I apologize. Because we have had a little bit of a shortened program this evening. So Mr. and Mrs. Dooley will be back on tomorrow evening to... and in fact, they insisted. Is that right, Bud?
Yeah, she wanted to come on everything.
Yeah, I talked to her and I talked to her husband, and they said if they don't get to come back on, that she's going to call her lawyer.
Oh, she's going to call her lawyer. Well, then we just better have them back on, huh?
Well, aren't she going to sue us?
What's she going to sue me for? If you guys think about it, this is what I keep telling you. What is she going to sue me for? She's going to sue me for what?
That there's no free speech.
That there's no free speech. Is that right? She's going to sue me for that?
Yeah, but that if you take it away...
How am I taking away her free speech? That she can't be on this show? That's not taking away your free speech. However, I'm going to let her back on the show. She and her husband can continue their harangue. Welcome to our News and Information Hour. Bud Dickman along with Robert Leonard. It's not exactly news and information, but for this parallel thing that we've been... me and Neil and a lot of people on Phil TV and HD... it's something that I started yesterday during our off day, our day off for the July 4th holiday, and I had gotten on the Library of Congress website, and I got into their Civil War photograph collection. It sounds like I'm hacking in, you know.
What?
Well, I'm going to got in, and then I got into, but I mean, I you know went to the Civil War collection, and I found these pictures, and they're. To me, history is the greatest story that's ever been told. I mean, I can't, there's nothing in fiction that even comes close to the actual real record of what has happened on this planet up to this point. But I found these amazing pictures of Civil War soldiers, both Confederate and Union. And I've been showing them on Phil TV and HD tonight on our video cast. And so Neil West, our technical director, took it upon himself. He said, I'm going to find out who those guys are. So I've been giving him the names of these guys. And then he looks up these people to find out, did they live? Did they die? And so far, the only guy, unfortunately, the only one of these young faces. And if you look at these guys, I mean, they're kids. You know, and you see how young they are. And they're being photographed with their pistols and their swords. They're very proud to be serving. Or they're just standing there with their rifles. Now, this picture here of this young guy, what'd you say, Bud?
Well, they said he's in a Signal Corps because he got a horn on his head.
Yeah.
He hasn't got a horn. He's got a bugle on his hat.
Yeah, well, it's like some kind of horn.
Right. So I think Neil said that could be Signal Corps. Did you find out, Neil, whether this kid, what happened to him? Harrison Corbin? No? All right. Well, of all the guys that we looked at, and wouldn't it be the case, and the sad reality of the war, of all of the soldiers whose pictures we looked at, four of the five were Union soldiers, and each one of them survived the war into old age. In fact, two of the guys lived to the year 1914 or 1915. I think one of them, the guy from Maine.
Yeah, he was 120.
No, he wasn't 120.
No, man, I figured out that was wrong.
No, it wasn't. It said he died in 1965.
That's bull crap. That's the one site said that.
That said it on Find a Grave. Ain't you never been on Find a Grave?
Yeah, whoa, wow, look at you, man.
What, do you think Find a Grave is where it's at?
Yeah, Find a Grave's all that.
Get up. Find a Grave is all that. Find a Grave, man, somebody made a mistake with that one, because they had this one guy, he was born in 1842, died in 1965.
Yeah.
Yeah? That would make the guy, whatever the hell, man, 130 or something? Are you nuts? So, or 128, whatever? No way did he live. They blew that.
But when he died?
Well, according to the record that I saw, he died in 1865. So the guy... Even though he looked, if you look at the guy's face, he looked like he's in his 30s. But, you know, hey, he'd been through a war, so what are you going to say? But this poor man, according to the thing that I saw, died in the last 2 months of the war. He was with the Maine Cavalry, and I forget his name. Oh, Grapham. Joshua Grapham.
Yeah, wait, is that Jewish?
I don't know, bud. Why do you ask a question like that?
They didn't let no... They put him in a concentration camp.
Who did?
Oh, that the wrong war?
Yeah, that's the wrong war. Oh, my God. You know why you're saying that is because we found some pictures. I know why you're saying that now.
Yeah, you had that picture of that guy from Auschwitz.
That wasn't a guy from Auschwitz. That was a Union prisoner. Because they've got pictures there. I don't even want to go into it. But there were pictures of Union prisoners, and they didn't look good, man. Anyway. So four of them were Union guys. They lived a ripe old age. The one picture of a Confederate soldier that we found, a young guy by the name of Joshua Trumbull, good-looking kid from the North Carolina Cavalry, or the North Carolina Infantry, and he died 1 year into his service. He had enlisted in April of 1861, which was right after Fort Sumter. He was from North Carolina, and he died in June of 1862 at a place called Fraser's Farm.
What happened there?
I guess a battle happened there. Why do you ask what happened there?
Well, I mean, that doesn't sound like a battle. It's just a farm.
Yeah, I don't know.
What, do you think he got run over by a tractor or something?
I don't know. He got kicked by a cow.
It was a battle, you idiot. What happened there?
Most battles are called a battle, not called a farm.
Well, they had a battle on a farm, Jack. Where the hell do you think they were having this war? They were having a war in America. America, where we live right here, you know?
Yeah.
Farms and pastures and stuff.
They had farms in Europe, man. And say, no, I know one battle in Europe been about a farm.
Yeah, except for D-Day.
D-Day? What farm was that fought on?
Well, they bought it.
I'm going to kick your ass.
I didn't mean it. It's a joke. It was a joke.
Like a joke like that? They bought it.
I was just joking.
It ain't funny. What farm? They bought it.
What'd he say?
You heard me. That's not funny, bud.
I thought it was.
Well, it ain't. And I'll tell you something else, too. You're never going to have a career in stand-up comedy, man, with all that cornball. And another thing, you're always looking for the opportunity to tell a joke, and it always falls flat because you always, always, your timing sucks. And don't ask me what I mean by timing.
I know what that is.
No, it ain't got nothing to do with your motorcycle. Nothing to do with spark plugs. All right. Anyway, welcome back here to the program. World famous Phil Hendry Show. Yeah, sure. So that was kind of an interesting thing there, but it all started yesterday. Oh, yeah, there was the one guy. What were you saying, bud?
Well, the one guy had crossed eyes.
Yeah, there was one kid that I shouldn't bring this up, but I mean, he survived the war, and his name was George Kimbrew, and he lived, he was from Indiana, and he was with the 93rd Indiana Infantry. Now, this kid, somebody let him in the 93rd Infantry, and that's great. And he had a picture taken of himself with a saber in the one hand, and he's got this pistol in the other hand, and he's looking like a real badass. There's only one problem. This guy's got crossed eyes.
Man, you're right.
Yeah, look at him. He's got those eyeballs that go in.
Cross-eyed Mary and everything.
Right. So we're sitting here thinking, well, I know he didn't shoot anybody with eyes like that. How the hell did he even get through the, you know?
Maybe they threw him out or something.
Yeah, he probably got fired.
Probably got fired. They don't fire you, man. Why would they hire him in the first place? So anyway, George Kimbrew lived to be a ripe old age. The guy died in 1917, something like that, or 1907, I forget which, but he definitely had some crossed eyeballs there, man. Wow. All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Now, coming up tomorrow will be another free Phil Hendry podcast. It is episode number 14 of the free Phil Hendry podcast. And just hit the link there on our homepage, philhendryshow.com. It'll take you right to that podcast. Also, beginning tomorrow, all of you guys that have a mobile phone, that use your mobile for accessing all kinds of things, beginning tomorrow, use your mobile phone to access the free Phil Hendry podcast. You can do that. Just hit the link. It'll take you directly to the file page or to a place where you can subscribe to it. That's starting tomorrow using either your iPhone or any kind of an Android phone. And also, just a reminder that the Best of Ted Bell is now posted in our shop. And that is a beautiful thing, man.
Yeah, all the best of the Ted Bell CD cuts. And they also got a free cut there, too.
That's right. Thank you, Robert. There is a free nacho cheese and grape drink is one free download with the Best of Ted Bell download. So head on over to our shop there at philhendryshow.com and pick up the very first ever best of one of our guests, Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills. In fact, we're going to have Ted on in a moment here to talk a little bit more about that and other falderall here. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. Listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world famous Phil Hendry Show. That guy was in prison. We found another picture of a guy. That guy is a guy from South Carolina named Captain George F. Frescott, and he was in prison in Boston, Massachusetts.
What for?
Well, it was the Civil War, so I don't know. He might have been a member of the Confederate Navy.
It looked like maybe a pirate or something.
No, he wasn't no pirate, man.
Looked like it.
Well, he might have looked like one, but cats back then, they all looked like pirates. I mean, everybody had a beard, and guys back then, they didn't have, like now, you see guys in the military, and they got a uniform, and you pretty much know, that guy's in the military, that guy ain't, you know. But back then, you put on a funny-looking hat, and now you're a member of the something or other. All right, welcome back to our program here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. In other historical news, this actually is news that broke today. And a bizarre historical note, it was from the Daily Mail Online, that there was a Jewish comrade of Adolf Hitler's in World War I who was protected by Hitler during a certain period of time, shall we say, even though it was known he was Jewish. And the reason he was protected by Hitler was because he had been a comrade. He was a commander of Hitler's in World War I. And Hitler intervened personally to save this man's life. Now, this is not to say that Adolf Hitler was just the greatest thing in the history of the world, because eventually this man did go to a concentration camp. But he was, his name was Ernst Hess. He commanded Hitler's unit during the First World War. He was baptized a Protestant, which is what a lot of Jews did, to try to save themselves from what eventually became the Holocaust. They got baptized as Christians, and they found out only too late that it didn't matter to the Nazis. The Nazis were exterminating Jews regardless of whether they had become Christians. It was a racial thing. It was a blood thing with Nazis. He had a Jewish mother, so he was a full-blooded Jew by Nazi race laws. Although finally thrown into a concentration camp in 1941, he survived the war to become president of the German Federal Railways Authority. Ernst Hess, in the body of the story, he owes his survival to the personal intervention of Adolf Hitler. The Führer ordered his SS thugs to leave the Jewish judge alone because Hess had been his commanding officer during the First World War. Hitler looked back on this time on the Western Front with great pride and fondness. So while some 6 million Jews perished in the Holocaust set in motion by Hitler, Hess was allowed to live on the Führer's whim. His remarkable story was told by his daughter Ursula after a newspaper unearthed the letter sent on the orders of Hitler insisting that Hess was not to be persecuted or deported. And they even print the letter here.
Yeah, there are going to be some people now going to say that Hitler was a good guy because of that.
Well, no. Anybody that tries to say Hitler was a good guy based on that has got a lot of work to do on their brain, number one, and then what they know about this whole period of time. Because there were Jews in the German military in the German military when Hitler was the Führer. You know,
what are you talking about?
I mean, there were Jewish guys. There were guys that clearly had Jewish blood that Hitler and Goering left alone because they were great military guys. One of them was a guy by the name of Milch. You know this name? No, you idiots don't know it.
No, is that a Jewish name? What's his name? Milk? Like Harvey Milk.
Milch. Although maybe it became Milk in America. It was M-I-L-C-H. This guy was probably the most brilliant general in the Luftwaffe in World War II. He was part Jewish. Goering knew it. Hitler knew it. And they didn't give a damn because the guy was fantastic and had built. He was the guy that built the Luftwaffe. Goering didn't do anything. That fat ass. He took it over. But Milch built the lift. He was Jewish, or part Jewish. Now,
what part?
He was like a quarter Jewish.
That ain't nothing. They're going to put a guy in a
concentration camp, you idiot.
Hey,
come on, you jackasses. Concentration camp, okay? Yeah, they put guys in concentration camps all the time that were Jewish, that were part Jewish, that even had connections. But these guys, the military guys that were really valuable, no way. In fact, the SS wanted to put this guy Milch, they wanted to have him investigated and eventually probably stick him in a concentration camp. And Goering said, no, I don't want that guy. We need that guy.
Well, what's that mean, man?
Well, they had it. Look, the Nazis were a bunch of scum, and they did anything they wanted to do. And they had a process that if a person was valuable enough, and in fact, this was what they did with Milch. If a guy was valuable enough, they went out of their way to Aryanize. And so here's what they said to Milch. They said, now, we happen to know that you're something about how your father was illegitimate or something like that. I forget. Isn't it possible that your mother had relations with an Aryan uncle as opposed to this Jewish guy that raised you? And Milch went, sure, if it makes me an Aryan, I'll, sign it. So they said, why don't you have your mother sign this letter that basically says that your uncle was actually your father, even though it was incest, and that was against Nazi laws, too. But,
Yeah, whatever works.
Yeah, whatever works. So that's what they did, and they Aryanized the guy.
But it was all phony.
Yeah, it was basically phony. But they needed him. He was a great general. They needed him in the Luftwaffe. Like I said, he's the guy that built him. So the Nazis, look at man, there wasn't one honest thing. Not only were they slobs and thugs and murderers, they were dishonest as the day is long. They were liars. I mean, these guys did anything, said anything, and would do anything to further whatever bullcrap they wanted to further. So anyway, getting back to this one thing, and I got really sidetracked, I apologize. This guy's name is Hess. This was Hitler's commander in World War I. He was Jewish. Hitler interceded on his behalf. And we know this because there was a letter from Hitler insisting that Hess not be persecuted or deported. It was unearthed by this newspaper, a file kept by the Dusseldorf Gestapo.
That a real place?
What?
Dusseldorf.
Yeah, why?
I thought it was a joke city.
A joke city? Why do you think that?
It sounds kind of silly.
Dusseldorf is a real place, okay? A joke city. Anyway, Dusseldorf Gestapo kept a file on him. It includes the letter from the head of the Gestapo and the SS, Heinrich Himmler, dated the 27th of August, 1940, saying Hess must receive relief and protection as per the Führer's wishes. Himmler made a point of informing all relevant authorities and officials that the judge was not to be inopportune in any way whatsoever. Ironically, Hess told his daughter that he and his old comrades from the trenches hardly remembered Hitler at all, by then a well-known figure in German politics, when they met at reunions in the 1920s and 30s. He told her that the future dictator rarely spoke and had few friends among the troops. Historians have in recent years poured scorn on the Nazi myth of the heroic Corporal Hitler running messages from one frontline trench to another. In fact, other soldiers regarded him as a rear area pig taking his messages between headquarters a few miles behind the front. Hess was born in 1890. He joined the 2nd Royal Bavarian Reserve, blah, blah, blah. Both men were deployed to Flanders, blah, 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 blah. Now, he did eventually go to a concentration camp in 1941, and he survived. And we can get into the rest of this, but he was forced by the laws to quit his post as a judge. His family saw him beaten up outside his house by Nazi thugs the same year. He petitioned Hitler in 1936 for an exception to be made for him and his daughter under the race laws. In his letter, Hess said, "For us is a kind of a spiritual death to now be branded as Jews." He ended up a slave laborer building barracks. He escaped extermination because of his privileged, miscegenated marriage.
What's that mean?
Misogyny. Well, I don't know what. Miscegenate. Basically, it was a marriage between two opposite racial types. He was married to an Aryan. All right. That's the end of that. This stuff is sick, man.
Yeah, but I mean, like, Hitler saved that one guy's life.
He didn't save anybody. By the 1941, they threw his ass in a concentration camp anyway, where he could very well have gotten killed. So,
Yeah, but he married, like, the right lady.
Look, don't get any bright ideas about what a great guy you think Hitler is.
I don't think he's a great guy. I thought maybe he'd done one good thing.
He ain't done nothing good. All right, we'll be right back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show. Woo.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-PHIL. Don't forget tomorrow, it's episode number 14 of the free Phil Hendry podcast. It's going to be available there through our podcast link at philhendryshow.com. Now, here's the latest bit of garbage.
You got to at least think it's true.
Oh, get out of here, will you, bud, before I smack you around. So Nicolas Cage, did you hear this? And the only reason why we're bringing this up is because we were talking about the Civil War. This is actually a story that goes all the way back to September of 2011. Some jive ass was digging through a trunk of old photographs, and he found a picture of a guy from Tennessee in 1870 who looks just like Nicolas Cage. So the guy started a rumor. He's an antiques dealer, so that's where he got the photograph. So the guy started a rumor that Nicolas Cage was a vampire, and he posted the photograph on sale for sale on eBay, and he says, oh, I think Nicolas Cage is a vampire, and that he's some kind of a Walking Dead guy, you know.
Yeah, but see, that guy believes it.
No, he doesn't believe it, bud.
Why did you say that?
He doesn't, but he's trying to sell the picture, and he's counting on guys like Bud and you to buy it.
You mean he's full of it?
Well, what do you think, man? And I'll tell you one other reason. As it was pointed out, vampires can't be photographed.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah. I bet you that makes you feel a whole lot better, huh?
Well.
Yeah, yeah. So, at least that's what some people think. Maybe they can be photographed. Maybe, you know. What do you think about that, bud?
Shut up.
I mean, you gotta get your head on straight, man. So anyway, this guy who's an antiques dealer who wanted to make himself some money on some photograph that he found looked like, I think it was pretty funny, actually. And I got to hand it to the guy. He posted, and I guess he posted this on eBay. He said, personally, I believe it's him and that he is some sort of a walking undead vampire who quickens or reinvents himself once every 75 years. The post was removed. 150 years from now, he might be a politician, the leader of a cult, or a talk show host. If there are still talk show hosts. Anyway, Mord claims that the supposedly 47-year-old actor looks virtually unchanged since his first big hit, Moonstruck. So, you get the idea. And I don't know whether this guy has actually sold the photograph. I will tell you that the vampire aficionados came out with the news that he was offered $1 million... for the photo, but it has since been removed. I don't know where he gets that.
That's proof, man, that people probably want to buy it.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm just not buying it. He was offered $1 million, but it has since been removed. The seller's so confident the person in the photo is Cage that he said any serious potential buyer will be allowed to have a photo expert of their choice examine the original photograph before any money changes hands. Well, that just will prove that it's a photograph from 1870.
Yeah, but won't that prove it's Nicolas Cage?
How's it going to prove it's Nicolas Cage? It's a photograph of a guy, okay?
Yeah, it's just a guy, man. You don't know it's Nicolas Cage.
You don't know it's Nicolas Cage. It's a picture of a guy from 1870. Does it look like him? Sure. But the fact, all I'm trying to say is I got to hand it to this guy for his chutzpah. He, you know, said it's Nicolas Cage. Who's going to say it ain't? Nicolas Cage? Nicolas Cage, who's going to believe him? He's a vampire.
That's my point.
Oh, so anyway, the cat was, he claims, offered $1 million, but the photograph has since been removed. I don't personally think he was offered $1 million. If he was, then he's obviously taken the $1 million. But he may be saying that he was offered $1 million to keep the price up there, you know.
Yeah, they probably all faded out.
I think probably interest went belly up after the sort of the novelty of it wore off, you know, because it doesn't look like he, I mean, who, you know, nobody really believes in vampires. So you really got to do some kind of $1 million. I bet you money that the guy would probably, he'd probably make a little bit of money. But the more you look at the picture, the less it looks like Nicolas Cage. So, all right, Alec Baldwin's possible run for New York City mayor is very real, according to his brother, Billy. Billy, who's been hospitalized with hallucinations, said the other day, I'm kidding.
Yeah, I was going to ask, is it real?
No, it's not real. Anyway, newlywed actor Alec Baldwin has often talked about his political aspirations, and someone close to him says there's still a very real possibility that he'll run for mayor of New York City. Just days after attending his older brother's wedding to a 28-year-old yoga instructor, Hilaria Thomas, William, quote, Billy, end of quote, Baldwin, told Piers Morgan on CNN, who believes anything, that Alec would still go into politics.
Ha ha, he believes anything.
Well,
you think he's lying?
I don't know. You can tell Piers Morgan anything. Anyway, I think on one level it's very real. I think he's very committed and extremely bright and knowledgeable, and I think he could do it, and he could run, the former Backdraft star said, according to Politico. On the other hand, I'm not quite sure if he's cut from the proper cloth, because it requires a lot of tolerance and a lot of patience and a slim fit. And you've got to like Jewish people. And
did you say that?
No, he didn't say it. Morgan cut him off, pointing out that Alec Baldwin has a long history of temperamental issues and a reputation for being a bit hot-headed. Baldwin's still under investigation for reportedly shoving a photographer in New York last month. He's been kicked off a plane for refusing to turn off his phone and infamously calling his then 11-year-old daughter Ireland a rude, thoughtless little pig.
What about that little piggy?
Yeah, they don't tell that. Why not that?
Little piggy?
Yeah, this little piggy go to market.
That's a toe, man. You ain't calling the whole kid a pig. What are you guys, stupid or something?
Yeah, but still, man.
Oh, get out of here. You're talking about this little piggy's a kid's toe. In any event, Billy Baldwin went on to say, let me remind you, Pierce, that John McCain and Rudy Giuliani are quite the same. And they are very successful and highly... What? What does that mean? Let me remind you that John McCain and Rudy Giuliani are quite the same, meaning that they've called their daughters pigs? And they're very successful and highly effective politicians, Billy said, defending his brother. Alec, 54, still admits he has trouble controlling his anger. In the latest issue of Vanity Fair, he described how he wanted to kill his ex-wife Kim Basinger's divorce lawyer with a baseball bat and fantasized about murdering TMZ's Harvey Levin for leaking the scandalous voicemail to their daughter 5 years ago. That's not really unusual, you know.
It's not?
Have you ever fantasized about kill a guy?
Yeah. Yes, I have.
That's it. Well, and you think you're going to run for mayor or something?
No, I don't think I'm going to run for mayor. What the hell's wrong with you guys?
Well... Yeah, if you say that you have, though.
Yes, I fantasized about killing people, sure. Haven't you?
No, but then I'm not running for mayor.
I ain't running for mayor either. Where are you guys getting this thing I'm running for mayor?
Well, not anymore, you ain't.
Hey, let me tell you something. You know, if you get angry enough, what did I say after the Mel Gibson thing? I told you, after the Mel Gibson thing, why do they have that? Get that vampire shot off of there. After the Mel Gibson thing... I said, Mel Gibson's way out of line. I said, displays of anger like that are unacceptable. I said that it's destructive, it's self-destructive, and it's destructive to your relationships. That kind of rage doesn't get you anywhere in life other than people hate your guts and want nothing more to do with you. And then I said, I understand that kind of rage.
Yeah, so what's that mean if you say it don't get you nowhere?
When I say that I understand that kind of rage, that is not the same thing as saying I endorse it. I'm simply saying I understand it. I understand it. Mel Gibson's probably got the same issues I've got. He's got these rage issues. Okay? And there are ways of dealing with that. One of the things you got to do is you got to be a hell of a lot more philosophical about life. You've got to understand that because one thing happens or another thing happens, it does not in total mean your whole life is going to hell in a handcart. Okay? I understand that kind of rage. You got to control it. Now, when you say, have I ever fantasized about killing people? Sure I have.
Yeah, well, if a cop hears that And then the person dies, then what will that do?
What did you say, man? Yeah, what did you say?
I said if a cop hears about that you fantasize about killing a guy, what will that do?
If a cop hears about me fantasizing about killing a guy...
Yeah, and that guy died.
I guess the cop's going to wonder, hey, I wonder if Phil Hendry killed him. Jeez.
Won't that be bad?
No, man. What's going to... Look, the last thing a murderer of someone, a real murderer of someone, is going to sit down and say to a cop, yeah, I had fantasies about killing the guy. You know? I mean, maybe. But, I mean, if I'm going in there, I'm going to tell a cop the truth. I'm going to say, I didn't kill him. Well, didn't you have fantasies about killing him? Yeah, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah, they're going to arrest you and everything.
No, they ain't, man. No cop is going to... I mean, you know, I don't think any cop is going to want to, you know, throw the book at me because I had a fantasy about killing somebody. But the fact of the matter is, I have. Have I ever acted on it is the next question you should have asked me.
No, I don't want to ask that.
No, you wouldn't want to ask that because that would just spoil the fun, wouldn't it?
Well...
No, I haven't acted on it. Never would I ever, because I know the difference. I know the difference between just straight anger and fantasy and actually acting on something like that. So anyway, but here's Alec Baldwin. And I got to tell you, I sort of vicariously enjoy that, where he said he fantasized about killing Harvey Levin for leaking the voicemail to their daughter 5 years ago.
Bob, you think that's funny?
Yes, I do. And that he wanted to kill his ex-wife's divorce. Anyway, the guy's a hothead, man. But maybe his new wife is mellowing him, according to Billy. You have to let that go, Baldwin told the magazine, saying he now occasionally has cordial conversations with Basinger about their now 16-year-old daughter. Enough time, I mean, it does heal wounds. The 30 Rock star did say on his radio show.
Yeah, he's got a radio show.
What radio show?
I don't know, man.
Don't tell me, hey, Karmazin, is this another guy you gave a radio show to? Somebody call up Mel over there. It's, you know, Sirius XM. Is this another guy that's working for free over there?
Are you kidding me? Alec Baldwin charge $1 million a year.
Not if he's working for Mel Karmazin, he ain't. It's another movie star that you got working over there at Sirius XM, huh, Mel? That you're paying, what, 5 cents an hour to? Just as a way to promote the show? Good God.
You know, you ought to quit talking that way, man. That guy is never going to hire you.
Who, Mel Karmazin?
Yeah.
Of course he's never going to hire me, because he's paying $5 an hour. How the hell can I work for that?
Yeah, but you get to be on Sirius.
So what? You know what kills me? These people that say, hey, Phil, wouldn't you like to work on Sirius XM? Not if they're paying $5 an hour. No, I don't.
Yeah, you shouldn't say that, man, because they got a rep.
I don't get... Oh, they've got a rep. Oh, well.
Yeah, you're going to make Mr. Karmazin look bad.
Oh, I'm going to make him look bad. Well, I wouldn't want to do that. I want to keep the illusion going that if you work at Sirius XM, you're making $85 billion an hour, and you're a real star, and you're being driven to work every day in a limousine. Not. No way, man. I'm just wondering, you know, I shouldn't say, because I don't know where the hell Alec Baldwin's doing his radio show. Anyway, he said on his, quote, radio show that he was no longer interested in running for New York City's mayor after the American Airlines incident in December, but did tell Vanity Fair he still thinks about it.
Maybe he fantasizes about it.
Yeah, maybe he's fantasizing about that and his baseball bat. I think I do want to go into politics. I really do, Baldwin said, and I don't know if I will. If I want to run for what? You have to run and ask a lot of whys. Run for the glory? Run to complete some missing piece of myself? I can keep doing what I'm doing for a living now and be perfectly happy. The actor also returned to Twitter with a new username, ABF Alec Baldwin, for his art-supporting Alec Baldwin Foundation. Oh, after quitting the social media site on Monday. 4th of July, he tweeted on Wednesday's Independence Day, our forefathers fought for our right to nap on the beach. Alec Baldwin. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. There's nothing more to say. I'm all done.
Yeah, man, Alec Baldwin just said everything for you.
Yep, Alec Baldwin has said it all. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Oh, who do we have? Well, I know we've got somebody coming up in this next quarter hour. Forget who. We'll be right back. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. For more information on this and other great talk programs, go to talkradionetwork.com.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, reminding you, if you don't have a backstage pass, get one at philhendryshow.com, and that's just that is your magic ticket to thousands of hours of archived great radio, as well as our nightly video cast, as well as our video archive, as well as a year of our Saturday night show, both audio and video, and everything else, as well as access to our comment section. You know, the only people that are allowed to comment in our news feed are our backstage pass holders, and I'm over there and giving people a hard time, and they give me a hard time. It's a lot of fun. So join us at philhendryshow.com at a backstage pass. Now, what were you saying, Robert?
I didn't know you liked Spike Lee.
Yeah, you like Do the Right Thing and everything?
The reason why I brought up Spike Lee to you guys is because I saw him today on TCM. He was on with Robert Osborne because Neil was saying that Alec Baldwin has a radio show in New York, not on Sirius, on some other channel, and that he's had Robert Osborne as a guest because I guess he was on Robert Osborne with that TCM thing. So anyway, today I'm watching, and I saw Spike Lee on there. And
yeah, but that's an old people channel.
It's an old people channel. You're right. But Spike Lee is a damn good filmmaker and appreciates a lot of those great movies. And he was talking about, they said to him, him and Robert Osborne was on there. And he said, now, this was one of these features.
Yeah, they pick out their favorite movie like they had Drew Barrymore do.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like a guest programmer.
Yeah.
So Spike Lee was on as the guest programmer, and he had picked out a movie, and it was a Billy Wilder movie called Ace in the Hole. Now, Billy Wilder, you guys know who he is?
Uh-oh. I never heard of him.
Yeah, okay. Well, Billy Wilder is considered to be one of the great filmmakers in the history of Hollywood. He made a movie called Some Like It Hot. He made a movie called The Apartment. He's made some great movies. He made a lot of comedies, but Ace in the Hole was not a comedy. Ace in the Hole was a drama about media exploitation. It was the movie that Spike Lee had seen in film school. He got a poster from the movie autographed by Billy Wilder and Kirk Douglas, and it's just one of his favorite movies. And as it turns out, listening to Spike Lee today, Billy Wilder was one of his favorite filmmakers.
Yeah, but do you like Spike Lee?
Well, I was going to say, you guys know I like Spike Lee. How many times have I watched Do the Right Thing?
Yeah, well, yeah, you've watched that a lot, that's for sure.
How many times have I watched Clockers? How many times have I watched Malcolm X?
Did you ever see, like, The Girl's Gotta Have It?
No, I never watched that one, but, I mean, I watched the movies that I liked, and I think he's a hell of a movie maker, man. I love his movies, okay? Why did you guys think I don't like his movies?
No, because he's black.
What is it with you, man? What do you mean, because he's black?
Well, no, I mean, I thought maybe you didn't like black filmmakers.
What are you talking about? Geez, you know what? The problem with you, Robert, is the older I get, the whiter I get.
Yeah, something like that.
All right. Anyway,
yeah, you are bleaching out more and more and more.
Yeah, well, you bleach out, man. You ain't even anywhere near as old as him.
All right, easy, okay? Bleach out. No, I like Spike Lee's movies are tremendous. Clockers is one of my all-time favorite movies. Do the Right Thing is one of my all-time favorite. Somebody over on Facebook said, Phil, would you put a list of your favorite movies? And I didn't complete it, but that Clockers is on there. Do the Right Thing is on there. And I saw his movie Get on the Bus. I love that movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, nobody went and saw that, though.
Nobody went and saw it because it's a movie really about the Million Man March, and it was about a bunch of black guys who got on a bus and went to Washington to be a part of the Million Man March. And the movie was called Get on the Bus. And it had every kind of liberal. It had every kind of black liberal. And it also had every kind of sort of prejudice. I mean, it was really a very well-done movie. I love the movie. It had like...
What do you mean prejudice?
Like, for instance, it had all these black guys on a bus, and they're going to the Million Man March. But two of the guys are gay. So right there, Spike Lee was very openly challenging and commenting on a propensity among black males to have discomfort and maybe even more than their share of prejudice when it comes to homosexual men, especially gay black men. So he confronted that with these two characters. One of them played, by the way, by Isaiah Washington. He had the black conservative. This was a guy who was sitting there and going on and on about how he started his own business and he doesn't need all this black bull crap because he's, you know, and if you guys just get up off your ass and this and that. And that guy lasted about three blocks and they threw his ass off the bus, which is a very clear commentary there by Spike about what he thinks of those kinds of guys. They had the bus driver who was played by, I believe it was David Belcher. Or Richard Belcher, excuse me. I was thinking of David Brenner. Richard Belcher, who was Jewish. And the reason why I say Jewish is, first of all, he pointed that up in the film, and there was a problem that they had with him, as if to say, you know, is this your good deed? You know, and how do you really feel about black people? So I recommend the movie for anybody that, unless you're weird like me, you probably won't like it. Or black. All right, the Phil Hendry Show is produced by Neil West and Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Hendry. And don't forget to go to our website, philhendryshow.com, and get a backstage pass, which entitles you to the keys to the kingdom, baby. The keys to the kingdom when it comes to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And somebody tell Charles we will be on the air tonight at 10. Neil, I'm kidding.
Phil See ya. Hendry.